Hey, fighters, before we get started with today's episode, I want to invite you to text the two words contractor fight to 877-807-1740 and get more connected to what we have going on here to help you build a better business. 877-807-1740 and the two words contractor fight.
I was 5 years into this business, and my girlfriend, my wife now, she's like, how long are you going to do this? Because remember, nobody would give me a job. I was unemployable. The person I was back then to the person I am now is I've always been relentless.
Do you feel you should be further along in your contracting business? Are you tired of not making the money that you know that you're worth? Or maybe you're winning, but you just want to win at a higher level. I'm Tom Reber, and this is the Contractor Fight. Turn this shit up and get ready to earn more respect, earn more money, and be a better leader in your business. Oh, and P.S., this show is not for thin-skinned people. If you offend easily or have a victim mentality, you should probably just move the fuck on right now. Let's go.
Jeremiah, welcome to the fight. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Oh, man, this is an exciting time to be alive, my friend. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, we've been in touch for, well over a year on and off here and there following each other. And I knew I was going to have you on. I just didn't know when. It had to feel right. The stars needed to align, and I feel like they're aligning right now because there's a lot of shit going on in the world. And you're no stranger to being in a shit sandwich.
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah. I figured, hey, let's make it happen now. But for those who don't know you, man, give us the 30,000-foot view of Jeremiah Campbell.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. So, I definitely know I call my life the Hot Mess Express, and it's been ups and downs. It's been turbulence. So I'm 33 years old. I have two kids, 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, two boys. Been married this September will be 9 years from Southeast Michigan. My main thing when people ask me what I do for a living is I'm a mason contractor. So we specialize in restoration and repair. We don't do any new construction. We're super efficient at mobilizing, getting to the sites. So we cover about 4 counties. We do full service masonry restoration up to, I think the highest we've gone is 160 feet vertical, stopping water, doing that kind of stuff. And we do foundations as well. So we do helical piers, push piles, things like that. We lift and stabilize houses, fix the brick. So my company, Brickworks, we've been doing this. I've been in this industry. I'm 33. I was 18 when I first started doing it. I LLC'd my company, my first company in 2007. We've built the company up 60 team members, went down to 20, went back to 40. I mean, we've been in the ebbs and flows of everything. Yeah. So with the business itself, we turned in, I think we did just shy of 5 million last year. We were on track to do 7 this year. We've amidst this COVID-19 stuff that we're dealing with now. And we just continue to grow. But one of the most important things that I've learned along the way is everything is about personal responsibility, and everything is really about leadership and how you show up for your team, how you show up for your company and stuff like that. So let me,
I'm going to hop around here a little bit. We're definitely going to talk about that leadership piece and how you show up as the leader, but back up to when you were 18, did you start the business when you were 18? Is that what you did? Or did you work in the industry? Did you labor? And then you woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to do this on my own. What did that look like?
So I painted cars. I had to wait until I turned 18 to start at, I'm from the Detroit area. Everything has to do with vehicles. And my parents are both auto workers, and everybody I knew that was quote unquote successful, that was making $85,000 to $100,000 a year, worked 80 hours a week, and they were overtime working in the auto industry, which is totally respectable. However, I decided to really enjoy the effects that drugs and alcohol gave me. And from 17 years old, I had to wait until I get a job painting cars. And I started painting cars, and I did very well. And in midst of all of that, we worked a lot. I was in college. And what I ended up doing was liking the effects that drugs and alcohol gave me. So from 18 to 21, I was in and out of 5 inpatient rehab centers. And that's really where I, if it wasn't for a 12-step meeting, that's literally where I found it. So I went to a meeting and I was just trying to not do drugs and alcohol. And I walked in and this kid was like, "Hey, you want a job?" And I'm like, "Doing what?" And he's like, "We're gonna go canvassing." And I'm like, "What is canvassing? I never heard of it. Never heard of it." And he's like, "We're gonna go door to door knocking doors." I'm like, "Well, I don't have a car or a license or like anything." And then I call it like the Mr. T starter kit that he had, because he had like store-bought cigarettes and like a Red Bull. Yeah. And I had like a Rip It that was a dollar, and I was like rolling my own cigarettes. Like, and I looked at him and I'm like, "That's what success looks like." I'm like, "Sure, I'll come to work with you."
Yeah.
And he picked me up and we went to a local neighborhood. I think he took me like tanning. Like we went to like tanning or something, and like he bought me like a real pack of cigarettes, and I was like, "Man, this is cool." And I was like part-time laboring for my drug addict neighbor, where he was like doing tile and I was making $8 an hour for my neighbor. And like I had to drive him, pay for the fuel to drive him. And like I didn't get paid drive time either way or lunch.
Yeah.
So I would be gone for like 13 hours and make like $75.
Uh-huh.
And it was terrible. So then I went canvassing with him and he's like, what are we doing? He's like, "You see that porch? It's like all messed up." He's like, "We're going to go and we're going to take that and we're going to like grind the joints up." He's like, "It's called tuck pointing." It's later to find out it's not even what it's called. And, so I just went on the door and I knocked on the door and I'm like, "Hey, sir," I'm like, "your porch, it's messed up. It needs to be tongue and grooved." And the guy laughed at me and he's like, "What does it need?" I'm like, "It needs to be tongue and grooved." And he's like, no, "I think you're calling it tuck pointing." And so then the kid across the street that I was working with ran across the street. I think he sold him like a $350 job or something. And I went to work and I didn't know what came of it. I was just happy to get out of the house and like be around normal people. People wanted to be around me. And he dropped off like $80 or $100 like 3 days later. And it was like a $100 bill on my desk at my house, my mom's house. And I'm like, "Where did that come from?" I think my mom gave it to me, right? And he's like, "No, some young kid dropped it off to you, said it was yours for working the other day." And it was my commission for canvassing the job. And from that point forward, my whole life had changed. From that point, from just going to a meeting and just meeting a guy, and then we come pick you up, he had slacks on, and like I'm just like the epitome. And that literally has been that hope that continued to drive me and start me off in this entrepreneurial journey to where I am today.
You know, it's funny. I grew up in a family. My dad started a couple businesses. My mom started a couple businesses. My uncle was a painting contractor. I have all these entrepreneurs around me. And I never once thought it was possible for me to start a business.
Yeah, who does?
It's literally so crazy to me. Like, and I don't know why I just threw that into the mix. I just had like this memory. Like, I remember working for my uncle one time. I was out of the Marine Corps. I'm power washing this house for him. And somebody said to me, "Why don't you start your own business?" And I had never once thought about it. And I didn't do it at this point either. I didn't like leave my uncle's business or anything. But I remember thinking to myself, "There's no way I could do that. I'm not smart enough to do that. I had all this head trash around it." You know, you're talking about rolling your own smokes and stuff. I remember I-88 in Illinois, coming out of Chicago, driving west towards Iowa and DeKalb and all that. I'm at the Toll Plaza in Aurora, Illinois. I was maybe a year out of the Marine Corps. I'm 50, so I'm way older than you. And I'm sitting there in this $400 piece of shit beater Cutlass I bought. And this guy in this Mercedes pulls up next to me at the toll booth. And I remember looking over and he had like perfect hair. He wasn't all dirty and sweaty like I was. You know, I'm like, I'm making up these stories in my mind. Like, man, he's got a lot of money and all this other stuff. He never looked at looked my way once. I think he was like on an earpiece and all that other bullshit. And dude, I remember looking at this guy. I glanced over and I remembered, and I was fresh out of the Marines here at the time, so I was still a little high strung. And I looked over and I thought to myself, "That fucking asshole." Like, he's a fucking pussy. Like, I remember just being like so bitter towards this guy's success. And when you were talking about this is what success is, the guy's got he bought a real pack of smokes and he's wearing some slacks, and it just made me think of this. Like, I grew up in an environment that, you know, a lot of alcohol, a lot of drugs, a lot of issues with the law. You know, we had broken home. Parents were divorced when I was 6 months old, I think it was. And on top of that, no one in the family ever made any money. And so I've always had like these huge, huge piles of baggage behind me, dragging along through my life about money and value and worth and things like that. And before we hit record here, you were just telling me the story of how you're building your house right now. Okay. And some of the cool things going along with that. So how do we go from a dude who can't buy a pack of smokes, who $100 on the desk is kick ass, 12-step program, addiction, all this other stuff, to where you are right now? Like, take us through that.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. So it is. And you know what the cool thing is about what you just said was, and I learned, so like I spend at least, my wife and I have a podcast called the Destined to Be Podcast. And this is what we cover is the mindset behind it. So mindset is way overused, right? So the cool story about what you just said, there's a guy named by the name of Eckhart Tolle. Mm-hmm. He wrote The Power of Now, and he wrote Drop the Rock, and he wrote all these books. He's insane good when it comes to your ego. Like, he's like, he, in my opinion, is the best person out there when it comes to your ego. So he tells a story about the guy that I'm literally going to use your story. And the guy drives by in his brand new Mercedes with his Bluetooth in, he's smug as shit. And yep. You look at him, and because we're human beings, we place judgment. We're meaning maker machines. We place a meaning on it. So he talks about it. In your situation, you being the guy there could have more ego. So ego works in both ways. Mm-hmm. It can literally say to me, well, that guy, because I'm poor and I'm judging him, I could have more ego. But we think as a culture that ego is only looking down from above to below. It's just creating that gap and separations in that distance. So a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. I'm not afraid of hard work. Like, right. So I hire coaches, I hire mentors. I learned a long time ago, if I can cut a check to somebody, I no longer have a problem. Yeah. So how do I make more checks so I can cut them, right? Like, how do I do that? Like, mm-hmm. if there's an issue in my life, money can usually solve it. Health crisis is no matter what you do when you can write a check. So Dean Graziosi taught me that a while back. And he said, if you can cut a check, you don't have a problem. So how do I get those bigger checks? I got to solve bigger problems. Yeah. Hence continuing to evolve my business and get in there. And I like to be in the sweet spot, in the honey hole. But like, starting off, like my first vehicle that I had to trade my aunt. I had a Cavalier or like a Sunfire or something. Somebody sold me for $300. I like put a front clip on a Monte Carlo to get my license back. And like, I said, what am I useful for? So the good thing about me being a drug addict is one of the drug addict and alcoholic superpower is their resourcefulness. Uh-huh. Like, I don't take no for an answer. Like, when I have contractors on my house now saying that can't be done, I just look at them and I get super upset and my ego kicks in and I'm like, you don't even know who I am. It's going to get done. And then I bring a lot of resistance and a lot of stuff. So I do a lot of meditating and we can talk about that as well. But the reality is I will not take no for an answer. Mm-hmm. And I'm not willing to. Like, people see my life now. I haven't worked a weekend in like 3 years by choice. I spend it with my kids and my wife. I try to get home by 5-6 o'clock. The first 10 years being in business, mm-hmm. 7 days a week and never ended.
Right, right.
And like, my wife knew that. She was my girlfriend at the time. And thank God her dad is a narcissist and he trained his daughter to how to deal with that, because I am too. And I'm working away from that point that I'm not that person, but work comes first. Like, it doesn't matter. And then especially now more than ever, like me showing up how I'm supposed to show up. So like, I got off the phone with my fireplace guy 10 minutes ago. He's giving me a quote for $2,200, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, when you guys are listening to this, this is the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. So I'm in a state where my governor said that pretty much nothing's essential. We are essential because we work with the local energy company to unclog blocked chimneys. So we can recalibrate and by the time this happens, hopefully it'll be off, but you can write anything up to make it be essential. The way you write it up, you can literally say and make it essential. So we're calling police departments and stuff. It's a good buddy of mine. He's a listener to you. He actually is subscribed to you. We won't say his name. And he says to me, I got you booked for your fireplaces May 6th. I said, okay. I said, let me ask you, what are you doing personally between now and May 6th? Like, what are you doing? Like, you're shut down. You can't give estimates. You can't work. So he runs gas lines.
Yeah.
That's essential as shit. And I'm like, what are you doing till May 6th? And he's like, well, and he gets offended. He goes, what are you doing? And I named off all the stuff I'm doing. I'm running 5 crews at my new house. I'm running, we got 6 crews at work. I got my office staff, my operations manager, my sales staff, everybody's still up and running. And I said, I'm just asking this to you just so I can judge you. But I'm like, what are you doing in this time? Like, literally, what are you doing that, so he could have made, he'd stand to make 40% profit on this project. And I'm like, what are you doing for the next 3 weeks that you can do this? So the way people show up, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no way impossible I'm going to sit around and wait for A, the government, or more importantly, dude, you got to think about it. You're never going to get this time back.
Right.
Ever. So why would you ever want to do something like ever? Like, so go out there and do it. So the way I showed up when I first started this business, when I hire a new guy that comes in and he walks across my yard, I can tell you literally within the days how many days he's going to last here. Mm-hmm. By the way he carries his feet when he walks across my yard.
Yeah.
Dude, it's insane. And I'm like, yeah. All right. So it's the compound effect of, I don't know, I'm not very good at saving money, right? That's why I used to tell myself the old story.
Uh-huh.
I just found ways to make more and just make more than you spend.
Right.
Like, that's how you stay out of debt. And like, when the economy tanked last time, I had no money. I just started my business and I started buying houses for like 20, 30 grand. Did I have 20, 30 grand when I was writing the offer? No. But I just kept doing it and building up these investment portfolios and then selling and flipping houses and doing stuff. And I'm like, just having the opportunity to say yes when the opportunity arrives. And then people always just show up and they're like, well, I want a salesman position, or I want to be an office staff, or I want to be part of your management team. And I'm like, how do you think those people got there?
Yeah.
Like, nobody awards somebody a title. Nobody does anything. That's earned. And it's earned because they show up and do what they're supposed to do from day one. Like, I'm not going to give you the money and expect those people to show up and all of a sudden like rise to the occasion. No, you always fall back to your training. And I'm like, I don't know. Bedros Koulian wrote a, oh no, it was not Bedros. It was, who's that Marine guy? He wrote a book called Extreme Ownership and the Dichotomy for a Leader.
CL Jocko.
Jocko. Yes. Yeah. And I subscribe by those methods. And I'm like, if there's a problem, it's always my fault. How could I have been a better leader to show up to guide it correctly?
Yep.
I hope that answered part of your question.
Well, I tell you what, man, you touched on so many things that I think are super important. One of them is, I want to address this because I'm weaving in some things that I get from our listeners a lot into this. So just so you know why I'm going the route I'm going right now. You talked about make more money, right? If I make more money, I don't really have a problem. Okay. Yeah. Or whatever the problem is. And so one thing that home improvement contractors seem to have the biggest problem doing is creating processes and systems. That's about as boring as fuck to me, right? Like, I don't wake up in the morning and think in terms of spreadsheets and flow charts and all this other shit. And yet the business world is always telling us you got to have processes, you got to have systems. And I can't tell you how many messages we get from guys and that are all about, how do I know I need processes to grow my business, blah, blah. And my reply to them, pretty much 100% of the time, Jeremiah, is, well, let's raise your gross profit margin so that you're making more money. Let's help you score more points, okay, so that you have the money to pay somebody to fucking create the processes for you. Mm-hmm. Because if you ain't good at it, blah, blah, blah. So that's one example I want to give people that are listening right now, that of a real life situation here, where when you make enough money, when you have enough points on the board, okay, your defense is better. Okay, it's that simple. If my football team scores 45 and the opponent scores 30 on us every week, we still win the damn games. So this is where I see guys, what I'm hearing, if I'm reading between the lines from you, is you've been resourceful, you've always looking for a way to say yes to opportunities. What I love, and it reminded me of something that Ed Mylett has said, first time I heard it was with him, he talked about, be like a drug addict, right? He says a drug addict always gets what they want because they're massively clear on what they want, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there because of their resourcefulness. So like, those are the positive things that your past, you know, I know we didn't get a whole lot into your past, but drug addiction, in and out of rehab centers, all this other stuff, you know, family things. Guys, these are things that I believe have fueled you to grow to where you are now. And I don't mean just revenue in a company, but who you are. But I think these are the foundation of things. You're only 33, man. These are the foundation of the things that you're building your damn kingdom right now. And what I love is that you're not just using your success and all this to hoard and be for yourselves and this and that. But I see your wife and you on Instagram, and you got your podcast, you know, Destined to Be podcast, and all this stuff. You guys are giving back. You're helping other people, and you're really putting it in their court to look in the damn mirror, own their shit, take responsibility and create their own destiny. I mean, when I think back of the guy, I know I'm hogging this right now, but when I think back of this guy in the Mercedes next to me, you know why I hated him? I hated him because at the time, looking back now, I didn't realize I had the choice back then to have that quote success that I thought he had. You know what I mean? I had been conditioned my whole life that rich people were assholes. Okay, blah, 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 blah. And now when I talk to somebody like you and other mentors of mine and other successful people, and what I see now when I see a person who's building a big ass house or they have a big ass bank account or they can take time off and this, and I see somebody who's not a rich, spoiled yuppie, we used to call them. Okay, I see them as somebody who I'm like, man, I don't know that fucker's story, but I bet he busted his ass. I bet he had to own his shit. He had to look in the mirror. Who was a Jim Rohn million years ago that said, don't set the goal of being a millionaire to have $1 million. Set the goal to be a millionaire for who you're going to become in order to achieve $1 million. And that has always stuck with me. So you got me fired up there, man. So I was just rambling about. I really don't have a damn point, but I'm all over with this because of the messages that I get and the excuses I get. And I mean, you're 33. All right, let's rewind from 18. What were the first, you started your business during the last economy shit storm,
correct?
Right?
Yeah.
So what got you through that? Because I want to carry us into COVID here a little bit. What got you, did you grow during the recession last time? Did your business grow?
It was super easy to grow back then. It was
okay,
like,
see, that's beautiful. Why is that?
Yeah, so like anything you can make serve you when you choose to remember it differently. As human beings, like, and you'll hear me, I don't say human beings because it's all about your state of being while you're doing it. So if I feel rich and act rich in my subconscious mind, I can use as a source of intelligence. And this is cosmic woo-woo stuff, and I absolutely love it. Ed Milet was a mentor of mine for over a year. Absolutely love his content. He's one of the best in the business. And
yep.
And I know that you work with him and follow him as well. And then like the thing is the way you do one thing is the way you do everything, but the way you show up in your state of being is actually you have to change your identity behind it. So that we have this thing called a hindsight window that we can figure out ways to, and again, a lot of this has to do with Eckhart, but change it that we can remember things differently when we choose to remember it as a point that can serve us. So like right now, if I went through a divorce, I'd be like, oh my God, poor pity me. My wife is a smoke show. Like she's an amazing mom. Like she's wonderful. She leaves me. Well, people would look at that as bad now because we make a meaning behind it. But if my life made in my next future wife would be XX and X better, now I just shorten that window up. So I can make something, the world isn't taking place the way the way that I see it, it's my perception on the way the world is taking place and how I fit in it, right? So the person I was back then to the person I am now is I've always been relentless. That's a state of being, right? I've always been relentless. I've always continued to always, at the end of the day, I get mad, I get upset. I'm an emotional reaction type of person. I'm mainly right brain instead of left brain analytics. Mm-hmm. But the processes that take place, so I was a franchise model. So so you guys run high level masterminds, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So if I would have done this earlier, I couldn't even fathom where, but yeah. I always say if my aunt had a dick, she'd be my uncle. So it's irrelevant. It's literally irrelevant.
Right.
Everything happens on this planet at a certain specific time. I entered into a high level mastermind and I started talking and hanging out with people like in the contractor fight nights and just being around people in the proximity, which created the environment to these alpha males, these entrepreneurs. And they said to me, oh, that's cool, Jeremiah, you have a franchise. And I'm like, the fuck did you just say to me? I have a franchise? No, I don't. I have partners and I have this. And they're like, oh, really? How much do they own of the business? And I'm like, nothing. And he's like, why do you pay them like that? Because I didn't know what a process was. Yeah. I didn't know what a system was. And then, a couple of conversations later, and then it starts to become aware of it. So it's like you said, like the awareness of becoming a business owner. I never thought in a million years. I was 5 years into this business. And my girlfriend, my wife now, she's like, how long are you going to do this? And I'm like, what? She's like, the stuff with the bricks. And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, well, like, are you going to do it forever? Like, is this? And I'm like, I don't know. Because remember, nobody would give me a job. I was unemployable.
Right.
Freaking loser. So I didn't have a choice. I had to go start my own business. I used to pray in the shower for all I wanted to do was make $10 an hour, make $400 a week so I can get an apartment. That was like my goal, my pinnacle of life. And then fast forward, hire, fire, you know, do all these different things, built the company up, dropped it down, built it up, never really kept track of anything. I didn't keep track of anything till about 4 years ago. Like I would have to call my accountant, like, how much money did I make?
Yeah.
And like, I had no idea. Like that was literally flying off the suit of my pants. Thank God I got introduced to, you know, the Contractor Fight podcast. There was an episode about, I want to say about 16 months and maybe a year ago when you had Mike Makowicz from Profit First.
Yep.
So we rolled that out at the same time that I hired an EOS implementer and rolled out Traction.
Yep.
And that literally, I built the accountability charts and then I started building my processes around those accountability charts. I've been filling the seats in and we've been on Traction for about EOS system. And the cool thing is that whole book was written here.
Yeah.
Like everything's right. Based around Detroit. We have some of the best. I have access to Vern Harnish and to Gino Wickman. The house that I'm building right now is Floyd Wickman built the house, which is Gino's dad that taught him, was literally the next door neighbor.
Great.
Just these cool paradigms, but like building out those processes. People ask me when I go to coach somebody and they say, hey, what was, I'm having an issue with this. And I'm like, no, you're not. I'm like, what's your KPI? How are you holding them accountable? Mm-hmm. And like, if you don't have a process and when there's issues that arise, like they do 100 times a day, it's not an issue. It's a challenge. Challenges are made to have solutions to them. So it's how how Tony Robbins talks about how you train people to treat you and talk to you. So then I have them come in and I say, well, no, you don't talk to me about that. I'm not here for you to dump and puke all over me. My time is way too valuable because I know how much my time is worth.
Right.
Because I quantify it. I say, okay, I'm worth $1,100 an hour. Like, are you going to pay? No. So stop puking on the table. Let's talk about exactly what you need done. Talk about two solutions. So then that's how we started to build the culture and we started to make people leaders. Because my direct reflection of the results in my life, and this is how a good transfer into COVID stuff is how comfortable I allow myself to get uncomfortable is going to be in direct proportion of how successful I'm going to be in my life. Being in the unknown and not knowing what's going to come next is where all creation comes from. All the profits, all the processes, all the hiring, all of the things that we hunt for as entrepreneurs brings us into that phase of creation when we're able to be unknown. I don't know what the results of this is going to be, but I know as a human being, I always want to just reframe to what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
And there's no growth there.
Yeah, well, contractors, we always default to our comfort zone, which is working in the field, right? You know, putting the tool belt on for most of these guys. And so when it comes time to like look in the mirror and learn how to be a better salesperson and market your business and be a leader, those things are really uncomfortable. So the minute we get some resistance there, we often go, oh, this is too much. And we don't say this consciously, but we gravitate back to the things that we're comfortable with. And so, you know, I can go story after story after story in my own life, and I'm sure you could too, of times that I chose to walk into the punch. Those are the times that I grew the most in anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my big baggage that I carried around forever was I rode the short bus for 2 years in grade school. I thought I was stupid for decades. And I had this crazy thing going on inside of me. Like, number one, I thought I was stupid. And the other side, I thought I was destined to do something great in the world. And I'm like, what the fuck do I do with that? And I'm blown away by how many people that listen to the show and watch our YouTube and see us speak at events and stuff. Whenever I tell the story about the short bus and being stupid and carrying that baggage around, it's like guys come out of the woodwork and they go, oh my God, Tom, you could have been talking about me there. Cause my whole life, I thought I was stupid. And that's where I want to encourage you guys that listen to this, find something to get uncomfortable with. For me, it was going to an event a million years ago. A buddy of mine invited me to this event probably 3 years in a row. I said no every year because I was afraid I was going to be the stupidest guy there.
What event was it?
It was a private event that was held down in Cabo, and it was a leadership academy. And it was put on by, you know, one of the founders of Ticketmaster, billionaire dude, and a bunch of other guys. And I end up at this round table. One of my buddies that I grew up with was on the board of this thing. I end up in their board meeting on the last day of the event. I was terrified to go there because it was a college fraternity men's leadership event. I didn't finish college. So this whole the whole time I'm like, I don't want to go down there. I'm going to be the only guy that didn't graduate college. And it was funny. I was one of their breakout speakers, and on the wall they had like everyone's bios listed out, and everyone had like these big 20 paragraph bios, and you get to mine and it was like three lines long, you know, hey, he's a dude that so-and-so knows and he had a painting company. You know, that was my bio, and I was so insecure about it. And I remember just being like, if I don't walk into this fucking punch, I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to be who I need to be on the other end of this thing. And I got up there on this panel thing, and I'll never forget, there's like 100 guys in the room, and I'm like, hey, I'm Tom, and I didn't go to college. I just owned it. But that was such a source of head trash for me, because I grew up outside of Chicago in Wheaton, Illinois, and it's like, what you did is, if you went into the trades, it was like you were a loser, and you know, my whole family was in the trades, and every tradesperson I knew was dirty, tired, and broke. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then all my friends on quote, literally the other side of the tracks, their dads were doctors and lawyers and they had the big houses. So I had all this bullshit like many of us do. So anyway, I go down to this event, last day of the event. This is what happens when you walk into the punch. Last day of the event, I get invited to sit on their board meeting. And Jeremiah, I go in there and I'm like, I got to find something to write with, because you don't ever go to a meet. We came literally off the beach, walked up, sat around this big round table. It was like 10, 12 dudes at the table, all multi-gazillionaire people, man. Like, it's crazy that I'm sitting at this fucking table at the time. And so I'm like, I find this piece of paper wadded up in a garbage can, and I just take it and I'm like smearing it out, try to flatten it. Well, then I get in there and I'm like, I don't have a... I waited to sit down because I didn't know where everybody sat. So I waited to be told where to sit. Okay. Then I'm like, I'm going to write down what I'm thinking through the whole meeting in case somebody asks me what I'm thinking, I'll know what I'm thinking. So, but the problem was I didn't have a pen. So, and there was not a pen to be found in this place, dude. It was funny when I think about it. And so the guy on my right, every time he looked one way, I'd grab his pen and write something down and slide it back. The guy on my left, I'd grab his pen. I swear to God. And I look across the table, and there's a guy named Jerry Nelson there who's, you know, an amazing guy. He's got to be close to 90 now, at least. He was one of the founders of Ticketmaster. He dug in the desert, and now we have Scottsdale, okay? He found water. Like, he owned Troon Golf. You know, he's owned 44 companies around the world. Like, the dude's impressive. He's across from me. He's watching me do this pen thing, and we just kind of lock eyes, and he just looks at me, he just kind of shakes his head and smiles a little bit, like he gets it, you know? We're almost out of the meeting. This dude who's this big wig or owner of this big-ass lumber company goes, and they were talking about marketing, okay? So they were talking about marketing, and they said, we're just about out of the meeting. I'm like, phew, that was close. Nobody asked me to say anything. And this guy goes, well, Tom's new here. What would you do to market this organization? And I was like, shit. And I looked down, and I just had a couple words written down on my piece of paper. And here's what I thought, man. I'm like, all right, on a DISC scale, D-I-S-C, it's a personality mm-hmm. profile. People don't know what that is. I'm a high D, like I'm 100 on the D, like way up there. And I'm like, while I was writing these things down, I remember writing at the top of the piece of paper, high Ds. This table was high Ds. So with high Ds, you fucking get to the point, you say what you got to say, and you shut your fucking mouth. Like, that's generally one of the communication ways. And so I go, remember their high Ds, say what you had to say. In about 45 seconds, I said what I would do if I was in charge of marketing this thing. The guy who runs the thing looks at this assistant guy or whatever and goes, do we have the capability of doing everything that he just said? And the kid goes, yeah. He goes, all right, let's do that, meeting adjourned. They all got up, walked away. Dude, I sat there. It was overlooking the Sea of Cortez in Cabo, okay, like Sammy Hagar's, the next door neighbor. Like, it's a sort of a place. Dude, I walked out on that pavilion. It was like a movie because the sun was going down. It couldn't have been more perfect timing, right? I grabbed a beer out of the cooler. I popped the beer and I walked and I'm looking out over the ocean. Dude, I had tears well up in my eyes. And I said to myself, I'm not stupid. Because that 45 seconds for me was validation that I could run with the big dogs. that I wasn't a fucking idiot. I wasn't that loser kid that lived in the little shit house with no money and all this other shit. Now, I've still had things to deal through since then, but that moment for me doesn't happen if I don't make the decision to fly my ass down there and get in that room. And that's the point I'm trying to make here, is you guys never know where that fucking point is going to come, but it's going to start with you doing something that's uncomfortable.
I love it, bro. Dude, that's an amazing, amazing story, dude. And nothing in your external environment changed. It was only internal.
Nothing.
You gave yourself validation and you gave it. So most people don't believe. And when you start doing research on it, it's a huge rabbit hole, and you start looking at the, and this is exactly what happens to you, and it happened to me. And it happens to everybody before they hit the age. Some people say 5, some say 7, and that's when your subconscious beliefs are created. People look at their egos like they're bad. Ego's there to protect you. The ego comes from the oldest part of your brain, your reptilian portion of your brain. Those are your subconscious beliefs. So I take my leadership staff, my EO groups and things like that through these exercises where it talks about, what did your mom and dad think about money when you were 5 years old? Mm. What, like, go back to that place. If you didn't have a mom, if you didn't have a dad, they couldn't have taught you anything. But like, where did those, what story did it happen? My dad told me, if you're successful, the pinnacle of your success is when you can pay your mortgage payment with one weekly W-2 paycheck. So that was the belief that I took, that that's the pinnacle of success. I don't know, Dad, how about not having a mortgage? I don't know. How about buying your mom a house, Dad? Yeah. To where, like, you got to go back and change those. And people are like, so that's the hard part of the brain transfer, because my reptilian side of my brain says, I'll never be enough. I'm not worthy. And then the prefrontal cortex, which is the executive portion of the brain, your prefrontal, the whole front, the thinking portion of your brain says, no. Tom Rebar said, if I just was bold and took massive action like Tony Robbins and I do this, this, and this, then this will happen. But then the part of your mind that knows you better than anything else is your subconscious mind or your reptilian portion of your brain. And now they're going to be in conflict with each other, which is going to create turmoil. Then I can't do it. So I spend most of my time through NLP in different practices. I'm working it onto myself to figure out, like, I am worthy of this. I am capable of it. And then when I say, no, you're not, because you spent all your money, or you're not. And then I start to say, what makes that true? Mm-hmm. Why can't I run with the big dogs? Because right. I mean, there's so many books out there with so many people. I mean, Jesse Itzler created the Marquee Jets. And the only way he got to that, he bought all of the muffins. So he had to sell the rich people the muffins.
The muffins. Like, I love that story.
Like, how do you get to that? But it's like, it's thinking outside of the box. And when you're able to say to myself, rich people say, they don't ask how, they ask why. Mm. Poor people ask how. How do I build a multi-million-dollar painting company? How do I do that? And it's like the same way everybody else did. You just do it and make it happen. What story do I have to tell myself to be able to get to who I want to become? What's the story? Am I telling myself I can't, or am I telling myself I can?
All right, fighters, one thing that's jumping out at me as a problem is the lack of focus that the average contractor has on sales training. And that's not surprising, because a lot of contractors, we do what comes natural to us, and that's usually the stuff out in the field. But listen, a couple things you got to understand. Nothing happens without a sale. You don't produce the thing you do. You don't have team meetings. You don't cut paychecks. Nothing happens in your business if you are not selling projects, and that is your number one job, and it's always your number one job, but even more so with the struggles that are going on right now. Another big thing with this whole sales mindset is the typical consumer will more than usual attempt to play games with you during an economic crisis. They're going to try to pitch you against somebody else. They're reading articles on all the quote unquote, air quotes here, professional sites about how to beat up contractors and how to get the best prices and all this other garbage. Listen, sales training is going to prepare you to head those objections off and make sure that you're only spending time with the right people. And then finally, listen, lead flow typically decreases by quite a bit. That means you have less at-bats to hit your break-even numbers and all that other stuff. So you actually have to sell, in most cases, at a higher profit margin than you normally would to recover your overhead. With the less at-bats that you have. So listen, I've been beating this drum for 6 years in the Contractor Sales Academy. I'm a co-founder of that kick-ass program. For 6 years, guys, we've been teaching contractors how to sell at higher rates, how to not run around wasting a bunch of windshield time. And the flavor of the month right now in the world is due online and virtual estimates. Well, guys, we've been doing it for 6 years. And if you're interested in learning the methods that we teach and how to really connect with your clients and how to sell your jobs at higher rates and stuff like that, I want to invite you to go do a free demo with one of our team members at contractorsalesacademy.com/demo. Schedule your time, grab 10, 15 minutes and see what's under the hood that we have going on at Contractor Sales Academy. So contractorsalesacademy.com/demo. Don't half-ass this sales stuff. Right now, it's all about putting points on the board, and we want to help you do that. I'm out. You know, it's funny when you brought up, you know, what beliefs do you have about money? When you think back to your past, the very first thing I thought growing up in my family that I just walked away with, if I had one thing to hang my money hat on, it was money's hard to make.
Yeah.
Like that was just this, you know, that you're either wired to or you're not, you're born into it, you know, and I don't mean born into it like silver spoon. I just mean like you're born with the skill to do it or not. Mm-hmm. And really what do you right now, if I said, give one sentence on how to make money for the person who's listening to this right now, who might be in business for 10, 15 years as a contractor, can't get over the hump, can't get over that personal income, you know, goal or whatever it might be, his debt's still increasing, all this other garbage, right? It has nothing to show for the fucking business he's been working in for 10 years. What do you tell that guy about making money?
If one sentence would be hire a coach. That would be my one sentence, because like you can do it, but you have to be sales and marketing. Sales and marketing is a lifeline of a business. So when I hired my first sales coach to write a sales process, when I started to restructure my business, he's like, Jeremiah, you're one hell of a contractor. Congratulations. Now, who are you trying to prove that to? There's nothing wrong with craftsmen. Like right. I appreciate a good craftsman, owner operators. There's nothing wrong with that. However, you're never going to be more than that. So I have friends that are craftsmen and I respect them. I'm not in this business. I want to make other people rich in my business. Yeah. Yeah. So I had to start looking at my business as, because I'm like, if all else fails, I'll put my sales pen down, take my collared shirt off, and I'll go back to installing masonry.
Right.
And I always lived that way and I always use it on my back burner. That's not burning the boats behind you when you arrive to the island. Right. That's not fully believing in yourself. The reason the law of attraction doesn't work for people is because their subconscious identity doesn't allow them. You can't be 99% of the way in. When you go up to somebody, when you stand up and have your 45-second moment and you say exactly what you're supposed to say, you probably blacked out. You probably entered into flow state, had no idea what you're saying. Your subconscious mind says, this is time to show up. People don't allow themselves to get to that point. So when the guy said to me, he's like, you're a fantastic contractor, but you got to stop being a contractor. The minute you pick a trowel up, you're losing money. You're a sales and marketing company. And then I started thinking about the roofing and the cheesy guys. And then those stories started to replay themselves. Salesmen are cheesy.
Yeah.
Salesmen are slimy. Salesmen are network, like all these different things that it's just stories that I told myself, and I'm the only one that validates whether or not they're true. Hmm. So I've always wanted, and then I started focusing on who do I want to become and who does that person, what does that person drive? What do they act like? What do they think? And that's when I start to really create those elevated emotions and say, okay, cool. So like, if you can't fully encompass the body of being a business owner, like being a CEO of a company, being a person that runs and has people look towards them for leadership and advice, then if you can't embody those, like I tell people, stop fighting yourself and just become, just either go work for somebody else. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Not at all.
But I have friends that beat the hell out of themselves because they're like, I can't make over $100,000 a year. And I'm like, in this day and age, even with this coronavirus, like there's no reason you shouldn't be able to, like, My thing is, if you're in construction and you're not grossing over $1 million, you're not even in business.
Reach.
Like you can't. Yeah. Like
it's
you can
too expensive. There's too much risk. It's just go from that point of view. We have a thing. I don't know if you know this. We have a thing called the 100K Club. It's a group coaching thing that has massive value. It's fucking cheap as hell, and it's designed to get guys to $100,000 personal income. We give them the roadmap to do that, and we make the case all the time that if you are not making $100,000 a year, let's just take, I gross $100,000, Uncle Sam takes his cut. What do I have left? Mm-hmm. You think I'm going to be able to stroke a check for my kid's braces? No. So now you run it up on a fucking credit card. And the next thing you know, you're on this hamster wheel. So if you're not making $100,000, I'm so glad you brought that up. Like, you just, as a contractor, if as a contractor business, you either got to wake the fuck up, get off your ass, or quit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Because it ain't going to get any better unless you wake the fuck up. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. That's like such a thing.
It is. Because I don't hire for your abilities or your skills. I quit doing that about 3 years ago. I hire for attitude and aptitude, and I can train anybody to do anything. I have guys that come to work for me that started $15 an hour and are making $35 an hour with overtime. We pay drive time both ways at the job site. We have benefits. Now, I can only do that if the world knows what they're getting. That's the difference between cost and value. Mm-hmm. And I do this with my wife. Customers are just like me, and I got to remember that. And they're looking for a unicorn. They're looking for that 60-year-old man that doesn't like to make money, that knows how to do everything, that has an office that'll answer his phone, that'll do this. This is why I'm more than my competition. Yeah. Because I'm looking out of my office right now, and I have a staff out here that's getting paid. They're on salary that has to do this. They're answering the phone. Amidst a pandemic in the world, we're shut down. In my phone, since I've been on this call with you, he's probably rung 25 times.
Yeah.
But we're here to answer that. That's the value you get. So more than anything else, it breaks down to, what do you find yourself worth? What is your time worth? Mm-hmm. What are you truly capable of? And if you haven't taken the time to figure that out, me not knowing my numbers for my first 10 years in business is probably the worst thing, because I was afraid if I realized how much money I made and how much I didn't have. Mind you, I was building an empire of rentals and apartment buildings and all this stuff. And I'm like looking at it and I'm like, okay, so what does it take from that person I got here as in business to the person I am today? If I could do that again, what does that look like? And I'm not looking at how many more cars or houses I can buy. I hate second homes. I think it's the worst thing ever. I have a couple of them. And dude, it's the worst thing ever. Because somebody told me the pinnacle of success is having a second home. That's the dumbest shit ever. Don't ever buy a second home.
Yep. Yeah. But not with Airbnb now.
No, it's Airbnb pointless.
And all that shit, right? So, you know, it's so funny. For me, my greatest, I guess, definition of success for me personally, and that's the important thing here, is that we all know what it is for us personally, okay, and not looking at other people, right? For me personally, dude, it's my freedom. I want to have a choice to do whatever the fuck I want every day, mm-hmm. okay? And I want to work, by the way. I like to work. I like to have an impact. I like to coach. For me, one of the definitions of success going on 17 years ago now was I wanted to coach high school football. I'm a head high school football coach here in Colorado, okay? And I'm rebuilding the program, and it's hard, and it's tough, and I got amazing coaches and this and that. I have the freedom to go do that because I got clear on exactly what I wanted mm-hmm. a long time ago. So I want to share one thing here. You talked about guys don't make money and this and that, you know, $100,000 and more and blah, 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 because they don't see the value in themselves, right? It starts with ourselves. What am I worth? You said it earlier, you're worth $1,100 an hour, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's however you got that metric, that's your metric, and it's cool, right? I believe mm-hmm. it. One of the things we talk about all the time in our programs is I tell guys, start thinking of yourselves as a multiple zero guy. Okay. So you got, if you have a one and you put two zeros behind it, that's only $100. Mm-hmm. You're at least a 3-0 guy. Okay, you're $1,000. Think in terms of thousands, not hundreds, mm-hmm. not tens, things like that. And I'm doing a shit job of explaining how we do this, but I got this from a mentor of mine. He's going, you don't change your life in hundreds, you change it in thousands. Okay, and if contractors just realize that, in fact, when he started his business, he was already a millionaire, and he built North America's largest swimming pool maintenance company, sold it, his half or whatever it was. He was set. And then he decided to start a water feature business. Long story how he got there. His name's Steve. How he got there. When he started that business, he had like virtually no experience in it. And he just said to himself, if my phone rings, I don't leave unless I'm making at least $1,000 a day. Mm-hmm. I don't leave the house for $1,000 a day or less or whatever or more. And that one thing, right from day one, dude, he was making fucking killer money.
You have to.
Okay. Like, it's just that mindset that, guys, you listen to this. You're, think of the time and the money and the risks and all the punches to the face you've taken to learn your skill. Just think of the investment you've made getting your ass kicked through the years, learning what you know how to do, and you're going to sell yourself short by only having two zeros behind a number. Fuck that. You got to start thinking in terms of thousands.
The good thing is you have a great following. So the people that are listening, because I hire contractors, I hire people to work on my stuff. And the thing about what you just said is I just started thinking about, because no matter what you're doing when you're listening to this, you're building stories on how so you can identify with what we're saying. So you either agree with us or you don't agree with us. You think we're spot on or we're full of shit, one of the two. So we can only tell our story from how we perceive it. And I see all these people out there. In Metro Detroit, we get these guys that come in. I got a quote for glass the other day, just for some different glass features. And $22,000. This guy is a commercial glazer. Mm-hmm. And $22,000. Well, I hired a guy for $12,000. That's fully licensed, fully insured, and all. And he just does it in quantity and size. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, professionalism. So we have three uniques when it comes to, and if you go through a program, so you want to find your uniques. So professionalism, quality, and I should know this last one. Professionalism, quality, and there's a third one. I should know this. My leadership team would kill me. So what are those things that we're going to do when we show up in business? That's how we show up in every single area. There's some chucking the trucks or Bob the slobs out there that are trying to get that. When my truck or trailer goes out, it doesn't leave my yard for under $3,000.
Right.
It's a $100,000 setup. If it's under $3,000, it's not worth it. Just stay home. Mm-hmm. It's not worth it. And then when we created that, then we entered into the hundred thousands to millions. And then how are we going to get from millions to tens of millions? It's just a stacking game as you continue to build up. But if you don't have the processes when you're at $100,000 or $50,000 and you're not creating these processes now, because if you're anything like me, this is what you say. Well, when I hire my first employee, then I'll start to build these processes up. No, you won't. Now you're going to be too busy because you had to hire your second employee. Like, this is a fake game you're playing with yourself. Like, make them now. And this is what you and I have done. You make them now, and then everybody fills that mold as you grow out from that point.
So I'm going to take a hard left here.
Do it.
We're in COVID right now. Mm-hmm. 19. COVID. Is it 19 because it was 2019? Is that why they call it 19? I don't even know.
No, it's the 19th strand. So there's a bunch of different strands of it. Yeah, it depends on if you're a conspiracy or
see,
not.
See, I don't watch the fucking news. So, you know, I'm not all freaked out about it. Okay, you know, yeah, whatever. I'm just not licking door handles like I used to. And I'm, you know, washing my hands. So we're good. So COVID's here, fear's in the air, blah, blah, blah. Things are shut down and it's legit. I'm not minimizing. I'm saying like, hey, people are getting sick. They're dying. I understand that. I respect that. It sucks. I feel for those that are in states like you are in Michigan, where things are, you know, a total shit show because of your governor, blah, blah, blah. But those are the conditions, right? These are the conditions that were dealt, like it or not. How are you approaching this right now with your company as a leader? How are you leading your company through this right now?
So one of the biggest causes of this ease, and I really specify how I say things. This ease is the way that your body handles stress. So my body biology, like the biology of my body, is created from the ego. And then what happens is it, as it's created and as it's built, what it does is it goes into fight or flight mode. Mm-hmm. So when you're in fight or flight mode, you can't create. Your body is specifically designed to run from dinosaurs, to run from saber-toothed tigers. So what happens is when you have fear, real fear, like there's two types of fears. There's fear of hurting yourself, and then there's fear that psychology creates. I don't know if anybody can relate to this. I don't know if there's any business owners that are struggling right now, but they're driving down the road, and all of a sudden they say, oh, crap, my mortgage is due. And all of a sudden they were fine, happy, radio up, windows down, having a good time, and all of a sudden you get that feeling in the gut of your stomach that I'm not going to have enough to make payroll. I'm not going to have enough. And what that creates is an epigenetic change in your body where the endorphins get rushed, the chemicals get brought from your brain right down to your stomach through the neural pathways and starts opening this crazy thing up. It takes all the blood from your extremities and sucks them to your core. Now we're in fight or flight. We need to run to save our lives. When you are in that mode, it shuts down the automatic response for your immune system to protect itself. I don't know, probably a good idea to stop watching the news, to stop watching the media that comes into your life. So I know that once I get created into that fear and I get caught in that cycle, I am no longer useful. So what's my point on this planet? My planet is to bring value to other people, my wife, my kids, my team members, my customers. How can I bring maximum value? Can I bring value to them if I literally have a biology change inside of me that's making me? So when you're in, your body just wants to survive. When I'm in that frame of being, I can't be creative, but it also takes all rationality out the window. I can't be rational anymore. Like, isn't that like what contracting is? Like, we babysit grown children that are supposed to be adults that we're trying to coddle along the way, right? Like, that's what we do as contractors. So then I'm looking at this, I can't do it. So like, first and foremost is stop the fear.
Yeah.
If worrying worked, I'd do it. But if I worry about my business or how it's going to be, now, mind you, I'm not going to go buy a new McLaren this week. I'm not going out and buying any more investment properties right now. I'm being as resourceful as I can with my money. I called American Express. I said, can I postpone my bills? Can I do those things? Do I have the money to pay it? Absolutely. But if I can hold on to that liquid cash to pay my guys, I'm doing that. I'm tightening things up where we automatically start pulling back our advertising and a few things like that. But most importantly, I'm trying not to operate in fear. And when I show up as a leader, I can't get the COVID-19 virus. Like I just refuse to believe that my body would even accept that. I know because being a drug addict and an alcoholic, I did drugs with IV. I shared IV needles with people that have had hepatitis C. Literally shared blood needles with people that I never had hep C. My body rejected it and never, Thank God, and never did it. So I exercise, I watch what I eat, and I do those kind of things to know that my body, I know it's real. People are dying. However, people die every day of driving their cars. People die, all these different things, right? So not to get too politically either way for your guests, like I'm actively rolling it back, but I'm also foreshadowing the future. So your energy goes where your attention is. So where's my attention? My attention's not stuck on my governor telling me what I can and can't do. My attention's on how am I going to combat my biggest competition? So it usually would be my brain, my head, right? No, now it's the federal government. Now the federal government's saying, I'm going to pay your guys $975 to sit on the sidelines and not work.
Yeah.
We're essential. You should be working. But this guy, some of my guys might only, if they're making $20 an hour, they're taking home $700, $650, right?
Yeah.
How am I competing with the government saying, sit your ass at home and make $975 for the next 8 weeks?
Yeah.
I can't compete with that. Like literally, I can't.
Right.
And then if I call the government and say, hey, look, this guy won't show up to work anymore. Yeah, well, I passed the CARE Act and he doesn't have to work. He can stay at home.
Right.
Is that going to crush my business? Am I going to go out of business and put my house for sale? And no, I'm going to say, okay, cool. Like any good liberal would, they say, okay, look, these are the rules. How can I work around these rules? How can I make rules serve me? Mm-hmm. So then I call my CFO. I got a part-time CFO as soon as this shit hit the fan. I got my CPA. I'm getting all these people on the phone. And I'm saying, how can I make this serve me? How can I make what's going on in the outside world make my business stronger? Are brick going to stop going bad because COVID-19 came in? Mm-hmm. No, it's not going to happen. So people say, well, it's going to be the hardest thing. And when people tell me like the trade gap and like all of this and why would I be in the business I'm in? And I'm like, that just makes it, it's music to my ears. It's so beautiful. Because when they say it's going to be hard to find people, all I heard is I get to charge more. That's literally all I hear.
Like
my screening goes, well, no, that's going to make me more in demand. So I'm going to do a better job. I'm going to train people better. I'm going to get better staff built in. And I start looking outside the boxes. Who can't be hired at? Who can't get a unemployment check right now? I don't know, guys that have been out of work for 2 years. I don't know, who are those, prisoners? Oh, let's go talk to some felons.
Yeah.
Let's go talk to those guys. Can't get unemployment. Let's go talk to those guys. Let's talk to the guys that are behind in their child support. So now I'm giving people opportunities and chances. I'm just looking outside the box. How can I do this? How can I grow? And then I just ask myself better questions. How can I make this serve me? And when this is all said and done, am I going to be 30 pounds heavier and being like, why didn't the government take care of me? Am I going to be like, shit just went on sale. The world's now going on sale. Stocks, cars, houses, commercial, retail. How can I buy more of this?
Yeah.
And that's what I want to do because it's ebbs and flows, everything in life. It's not going to end the world.
One of the things I've tried to, I don't always succeed, but one of the things I try to do is whenever I'm throat punched by adversity or something that's hitting us, I'd like to say one of my first thoughts that I've trained myself to do is just to stop and ask myself the question, how could this be one of the best things that's ever happened to me? Mm-hmm. I just try to do that quick reframing in my head of, you know, and you might know this story. There's this old story. I'm not even going to try to tell it because I'll butcher the shit out of it. But like, there's this dad and his son breaks his leg. I don't know if you know this story. He breaks his leg and the kid goes, "Oh my God, this is terrible." And the old man's like, "We'll see." And then the army comes and they're recruiting young boys. You know the story I'm talking about? And they're recruiting young boys and the kid doesn't go off to war because his leg is broken and he feels bad because they're all marching off and he's not one of them. And he's like, "Dad, this is terrible." And he's like, "We'll see." And I don't know, I'm butchering the story, but I think like the whole army gets slaughtered. They all die. So was it really that bad that you broke your fucking leg? Mm-hmm. You know, like it's, and so that's, I really need to like look that up and actually tell it properly mm-hmm. next time. But it's just this, back in 08, when all that shit happened, I learned how to be a better leader. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was forced into being a better leader. I was forced to learn how to market a business with little to no money. Okay. Cause it was harder. So it got my eyes onto the whole content marketing world. I was introduced to a guy named Marcus Sheridan, who's one of the best marketing speakers in the world. He's a contractor, he's a pool guy. And now Marcus speaking all over the world, you know, and we have him in our Contractor Sales Academy and our group doing workshops for us. We have this great relationship. Now he's adding tons of value to people, you know, that are in my community. And I wouldn't have this community if I didn't learn content marketing and blogging and all those other things. And if the economy was still humming along back in 08, we would not be here today. And that's where I go, man, because of that, I've been able to impact so many more people than I ever would have without that happening. So that's why I'm always quick to go, how could this be the best thing? Shit, my family, I have 3 kids, dude. They're all adopted. Okay. I got a 19-year-old son who's starting his 4th week of Marine Corps boot camp today. Okay. He's out in San Diego. I got another son who's upstairs here now. He's 20. He's going to each HVAC school, all right, and college and whatever. And I got a daughter who's a freshman in high school, all right. My first son's from Atlanta. My second son's from Haiti, and my daughter's from China. Dude, they are here because I fire blanks. Mm-hmm. And that is the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
All your perception, brother, because yep. There's people, I have friends that can't have babies, and they think it's the worst thing that ever happened to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a very small part of me that was like, it was a blow. But here's the other thing. When I look back at my life, dude, my parents, I've never known my parents together. They were divorced when I was 6 months. I've always had 4 parents. I've always had turmoil and this and this and all this shit going on in my life. And I look back now, this is, you know, the whole life happens for you, not to you. That actually set the stage for me to be really okay right out of the gate with the fact that I fired blanks, because of course I'm going to have a kind of hodgepodge family. Why wouldn't I? You know, because that's just what I had. And it was, instead of looking at it like, oh, I got this broken home, I was like, fuck, this is cool. I got 4 people that love me. So I just think there's so many things that we could do as a leader, is really the point of this last section here I want to talk about, is, you know, all the shit that's going on right now with COVID. I want to encourage people. Yeah, it's challenging. Yeah. In the short term, you might be just getting the shit kicked out of you right now, but I want to encourage people to look 3, 6, 9, 12, 24 months from now. How is this going to be the best thing that's ever happened to you in your business?
Literally. And that's the identity. And that's the number one, it's the worthiness of it. But when you can look at a circumstance, like everything amazing has happened in my life. I never got strung out on heroin. I wouldn't be talking to you today. Literally, if I didn't get strung out on it, my little brother died at 18 years old of an overdose. And my partner in one of my businesses is men's sober living houses. There's hundreds of people that their lives, they became dads and husbands, and they were able to become kids, like all because of my little brother's death. So I can make things serve me. That's that hindsight window. How can I make it serve me? And everything happens for me and not to me. So I'm not the victim, I'm the victor. I just got to rewire it different in my brain and say, how can I get gratitude right now? If I'm not grateful for what I have right now, then I'll never be grateful. So how can I be okay with driving that beater car on the side of the road looking at the guy in the Mercedes?
if that guy is okay now, so everything has always been, is now, and will always be okay. And when I can rest assured in that gratitude and that just, and that's a state of being, you can't talk about being grateful. You can show the world how you're grateful. And when I show up and I donate to the causes I believe in, and I'm able to be there and I'm able to bail my family out of situations and able to do that, like, that gives me more gratitude than my cars will ever give me. That gives me way more gratitude than my address or any of that stuff. And so I do these things and I'm like, okay, if that's true, Jeremiah, and you actually believe it, then start showing up like it. Then I got to start acting more like it, because my whole life I spent time doing things and buying stuff to impress people that I don't even care about, to fill this ultimate way in my head to where if I had this, then I would be happy. And it's like, bro, no, I've been there. I know that. I have that. That does not make you happy. Like, you're still stuck. Yeah. We talk about a dressed up bag of shit, right? Like, I can dress it up on the outside, but if I don't feel good about who I am on the inside, now you're talking, oh shit, wait a minute. I learned this when I was 3, 4, 5, 6. So now we're breaking it back to like what our parents should have told us. And if not, somebody in our life told us these things. And I'm like, okay, cool. How can I be of maximum service to those around me? Bam. Your business, your life, your marriage, your relationship. If I can be there to serve you as a leader, you work for me. I say, no. We work together. This is a team. And this isn't just lip service, man. This is actually how I believe. And when I walk into my office, they can feel it. Am I a son of a bitch? I'm a motherfucker to work with, dude. These people, they probably have like Ouija boards at home about me, but they know they can count on me. And they know that I fucking love them more than their significant others at home. And they know that I'm going to pour into it. Ed Milet calls it antagonistic leadership. And I'm going to pour into you like you've never believed, but God bid you fucking do so. I'm gonna dump that shit right out, and we're gonna start to rebuild. But we're gonna do it together.
Yeah,
good stuff, man.
See, I can, our listeners can't, but I could see you right now. We're looking at each other on Zoom, and I loved watching that last minute or two there, because I could see you, the passion come out of you. I could see how fired up you are to lead your people and to live to your potential, and not only that, but to call others to live to theirs as well. I also know from reading an article that you were featured in a while back, if I'm correct here, you had a goal to make X number of people in your company at least $100,000.
Correct.
Didn't you? Okay, yeah. So like, I want to be very clear here. Like, the best leaders, like, some people might have heard that little rant going, man, this guy's a dick to work for, and blah, blah, blah. Guys, that's the thing. If you're not polarizing as a leader, and I'm not saying just go out and try to cause arguments for the sake of being polarizing, but if you could tell that you have some deep-seated good shit in you that is the root and the foundation of everything you do, and that's the type of stuff that's attractive to people. That's why people listen to The Fight. That's why your people follow you, you know, because we stand for something and we're not afraid to fucking piss some people off along the way. And I bet you right now, if I walked into your company, I've never been to your office. If I walked in there right now and I said, would you take a punch to the face for Jeremiah right now? My guess is pretty much everyone in that company would take a punch to the face for you.
Most
of them. Like, not certainly there's some that can always will, right? Okay. But like, I just think, I don't know about you, but I respect people that stand for something. Mm-hmm. You know, I might not agree with them. I might not agree with their politics or their leadership style or their vision or whatever it is, but I can always respect somebody who's willing to lay it all out on the line. And that's what I heard from you and just saw from you, which I thought was pretty cool. So let's wrap up with this. Two things. Number one, give our listeners a resource to read, listen to, watch, whatever that you think is worthy. Just whatever comes to mind. And second thing, the floor is yours to just kind of close us out with anything that you want to share with tens of thousands of contractors around the world. Man, dude, we got people in New Zealand and Australia and Great Britain and Mexico. We got fucking people in Kenya, Switzerland. It's nuts. I'm blown away when we look at our podcast stuff of how amazing this community is in The Fight. And so I just want you to be able to share anything else for a minute or two that's on your heart. So give us a resource and then give us something to send us off with.
I'd say the resource for business would be definitely Traction. Is a great book. It's changed my life more than any other book. And then for personal development, I would go like The Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. It's a fast read, super quick book.
Do you see this right behind me there?
There you go, right there.
Four agreements. On the wall right behind me. Boom.
I love it. There you go. So, yeah, so you just, like, the Totalic Indians had it figured out thousands of years ago, bro.
Right.
So that book, I wonder that, and I have the cards. They make cards, and when I walk in the morning with my sales team, and I read one of them off and just kind of go over it, what we're going to do that day. For any of the listeners out there, just try to – becoming self-aware is probably one of the biggest challenges, but the most rewarding things I've ever done. And what do you truly want? So people don't live in congruency of who they're truly meant to be. So if you're not going to be a business owner and employ people, that's okay. So live up to your own expectations on what you want to be, because if you're fighting your true inner self because of an ego or because of second generation or third generations having to take over somebody else's business, like, just trust yourself to answer those questions. I thought I could hire, I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last couple of years with coaches and mentorships and masterminds and being able to be around people to just answer questions that I could have answered to myself. Yeah. Just ask bigger questions and start questioning who you're taking advice from. And when you look at yourself in the mirror, are you proud? And if you could say yes to all those things, give yourself a break.
That's good stuff, man. That's so good. And then I didn't expect you to say that, by the way.
What'd you expect me to say?
I don't know. And what I'm about to say, I don't want to make it sound like it was going to be cheesy, but I expected something more along the lines of, you can do this. Mm-hmm. You got this. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but that's just totally when most people have that opportunity, that's normally what they do. And so I appreciate just you telling it like it is. And I mean, I've probably learned more in the last 3 or 4 years about self-awareness, that's truly the superpower. Than anything for me.
Well, just if you can just be present.
Yeah.
Like that's where everything happens, is in presence. Mm-hmm. So like when you get everything pushed to the side and you say, where can I be? No, it's being here now. That's where everything happens. So we get, Dr. Joe, you're a vision of the future or you're getting sucked back to the emotions of the past. And when it's stronger in the past than a vision of the future, then you're going to repeat the same exact thing over and over again. So how can I just be present? How can I be here? How can I be on this call and not on my phone or in my office? Yeah. And then where can I be? Because I used to think my biggest superpower was being able to multitask. And then I talked to doctors that were like, that's literally, it's not impossible. You can't do that. Like your attention's one place at one time. So then I started asking those bigger questions. And then what am I really doing? I'm selling myself short. Just be present, be here now.
So one of the books, I think it's Gary John Bishop, one of his Unfuck Yourself books, he asks a question and you reminded me of this. See, we were supposed to end right now. And then I'm like, shit, you reminded me of this. and then we'll be out of here. I promise. He talks about, when you talked about living in the present right now, and the question goes, I gotta dig the book out because I remember highlighting it. I should freaking make a poster and put it in here somewhere so I can see it every day. But what does my future require of me right now? That was like, that totally stuck with me. Like, we all have this future vision of you have the vision that you want to have a life that impacts people or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody wants to, they have a future vision where they're making that $100,000 a year or whatever is that first rung for them. And the question that he talks about in the book, he makes the case for it, is basically, what is required in this moment right now for me to get that future? What does my future require of me right now? I think is how he asks it. And it's so funny because that's, to me, I am not it's so funny. I get people like, Tom, you're so disciplined. You're so, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm a squirrel, ADD. I was labeled as hyperactive and all this other shit growing up. And I think I don't specifically ask myself that question the way he wrote it in the book, but I, over the past several years, I think I've pretty much dialed it in to go, what's the most impactful thing I could be doing right now? And that's the thing that makes me write down the things I'm grateful for in the morning. That's the thing that got me down here in the basement here before we recorded this to swing my kettlebells and do some stretching before we got on the call here today. That's the thing that is going to, my planner's over there, but my fight planner, I have my 3 action items and they're all based on a quarterly goal and all this other shit. And they're going to involve creating content. This guys, I'm not disciplined. I mean, I guess I am, but I'm really just thinking what you just said, what's required of me right now? How do I be present here now? And I want to make being present here now fucking matter later. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the compound effect for me.
That's one of the greatest illusions that the human existence has, is you can be somewhere else at the same time, but your body doesn't know genetically where it is. So I can have an action now and it can change the future. Well, we don't look at it. So when you start watching stuff like Dr. Quantum's double slit theory and how your perception can change the actual outcome of something, and I'm like, okay, if I just do this now, I can then create that. So dude, it's one of the most important, it's literally the superhero hack. I mean, Literally, you can literally create anything from that point.
Well, listen, I appreciate you spending so much time here with us today. It's probably one of the longest, if not the longest podcast I've ever done with someone.
Wow.
I don't think I've done, I don't know, we've got 260, 270 that are posted, and we've recorded over 300 of them, and I don't think we've ever gone more than an hour. And we've gone an hour 15 or 20 here, whatever it's been. So first, I want to thank you for that. For giving us so much time. I think I have the title. I was like, what's the title of this going to be? I normally, I think it's going to be like Drugs, Money, and Mindset or something like that.
Love it, brother.
Fun. Because you got quite the story. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about, you know, the recovery things that you have going on, your podcast, if they want to have you on their show or speak somewhere when we can all do that in person? What's the best way to reach out to you?
The best way is you can either go on our podcast, which is the Destined to Be podcast, or you can reach me at Jeremiah_Campbell on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. I mean, if they can't get in touch with me, they can get in touch with you. You can, you know, copy us on and whatever. However, I mean.
Yeah, we'll put all your links in the show notes and all that good stuff, man. So, well, dude, I appreciate your time, and I know you helped several people here today, and really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, brother.
Want some fight swag to wear? Simply share this episode of The Contractor Fight anywhere on Facebook or Instagram using the hashtag #JoinTheFight, and our team will pick one winner each week to recognize your help in spreading the fight message.